Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Moyen Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Moyen Podcast, all over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Apple Pods, on the Google Store, on Spotify, and lots of other good podcatchers, especially Anchor, where you can make and produce your own podcasts if you wish. We're back. I think this is Punching Chat 10. So that just goes to show how long
Punching
this has been going on. This is Punching Chat X. So, yeah. How mad's that we've actually managed to scrape this content, the barrel of Punching Chat content for 10 weeks and people still moderately enjoy it? We're joined, obviously, by the nicest man in podcasting, Ben Eustace. The Chinese lensman, who everybody
Fuck
loves. the curmudgeon that's a Chinese lensman. Adam is going to keep this ship moving forward, hopefully. And we are joined live from... This is international punching chat. This is European punching chat. It's like the Champions League of punching chats. Because all the way from Bucharest, who appeared on a Wall Over podcast, which I believe never actually went to air... where he took the time to explain all sorts of stuff about rugby in Romania. Friend of Ben and former university together. Is that where the connection is?
That's it, mate. Yeah.
It's a Bristol Bears fan, Lloyd Collins.
Certainly am. Also a Southampton SC fan, also a Hampshire cricket fan.
But don't let the inanely Welsh name give it away.
Oh, no. Hell no.
there couldn't be many, you know, other than Ian Evans, maybe, you know, Lloyd Evans, Lloyd Collins is right up there with Ian Evans, isn't it, as far as Welsh names go?
Yeah, I think what my parents told me, for some reason, they named me after my godfather, and his surname's Lloyd. He's from up in Leeds. That's what it is, apparently. So there it is.
There you go. Right, we're on a tight time scale. We need to get this done. So let's go. Adam, after you.
Okay. Well, I won't mess about and won't mess about with any small talk. That's for sure. Let's get straight into it. Rugby question to start. And this one is from, I don't know this person's name, but they've got a catchy at on Twitter, which is at AKAWD40. And the question is, given the lack of strength and conditioning, yeah, there was me going to be all catchy and I can't even get over my own tongue.
We're never getting out of here in 50 minutes, are we? Fuck me.
Well, you are. Do it.
We are if you're not in the final, Doug. Given the lack of...
So Doug's in the final?
Doug doesn't want to get to the final and Russell's here. It could just be me and Lloyd straight away. We could save 50 minutes.
Yeah, anything... Yeah, you're not getting
Stop
out of here.
Stop trying to make small talk and ask the fucking question.
Ironically, that's what I was doing. And here we are. Given the lack of strength and conditioning monitoring during lockdown, that's actually really hard to say. So I'm not going to say it again. Which rugby players may need more than 6 weeks? Oh, Jesus.
Let me do it for you. Which rugby players need more than 6 weeks to get fit? There you go.
Thank you.
Name a fat rugby player. Go.
Yeah.
Well, with that in mind, Russ, start us off.
Well, I'm going to say that not one of them, because from what I've seen in lockdown, is pretty much every rugby professional doing online fitness classes, Zoom meetings, and fitness stuff. Nobody's actually been throwing a rugby ball around, so they're all going to be in the same boat with dick fingers. And Kieran Brooks is still going to be a fat shit. So, you know, props are going to be props. Backs are going to be backs. And it might be back to the slightly more old school rugby where you can tell a player's position by his physique.
Yes. Yes.
We all love those days.
We do. All right, Ben.
This was a tricky question till this morning, and number one on my list was me. Mr. Dan Carter is making a comeback. He's 38 years old. He's been playing in Japan. He hasn't played a game of rugby since well before lockdown. So if he's going to be playing Super Rugby in the next couple of weeks, he's probably going to need a couple of weeks to acclimatise. So I'm sure he will.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he will too. Okay, Dougie.
Kieran Brooks. I know Russ started shouting my chips a bit, but
he did.
If that fucker
still eat him.
Been... Well, he's just been getting. I've just got that. single-handedly keeping Just Eat in business. And why that isn't a cup, I don't know why.
All of the chicken.
Yeah.
Do you remember when he liked my tweet when I said Kieran Brooks ate all of the chickens?
Yeah. Do you remember when he also liked my tweet after he moved from Saints to Wasps for reportedly stupid amounts of money that I said he had the best agent in the world? But Kieran Brooks, because he's fat.
Beautifully subtle, nuanced answer there. Okay, and we'll finish with Lloyd.
Okay, so I looked at this question and I thought, everyone's going to go for fat people. But there's another way you can be fit, and that's mentally fit. So I have picked the whole of Gloucester Rugby. Not just the players, the entire organisation. Well, normally this time of year, we would have just experienced the annual thing of Gloucester, as inevitable as death and taxes, screwing up right at the end of the season, either collapsing spectacularly before the playoffs and finishing sixth, or getting into the playoffs and crashing out against Exeter or Saracens. But they've had a chance to do that. So in the meantime, in this hiatus we've had, they've decided just to melt down as a club and organisation. Ackerman has gone. They've just got rid of Humphreys. There is the possibility of Rob Howley joining this organisation. The Little Mix concert has been cancelled at King's Park.
Did Howley have a bet on him? On Ackerman?
And last but not least, Danny Cipriani is definitely not going to be ready. I mean, he's probably buzzing around his house like a toddler on Haribo. There's no way that those group of players and that organisation is going to be ready in 6 weeks.
We will find out in due course. Okay. You mentioned Exeter there just briefly. Last week was the... See, this is how we go on Punching Chat. We don't do anything current. Last week was the 10th anniversary of Exeter being promoted to the Premiership. So what's the best rags to riches story in sport? And Douglas, start us off.
Oh, shit. I better look for my answer.
Yeah, you better. I could go to someone else, but... No.
Dead air is a crime.
I mean, I'll wait as long as you. It's fine.
Can we talk about the pedestrianisation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And now the answer is going to be real shit. A bloke... Oh, fuck off. Rob Cross. There you go. Next.
More like Doug Cross.
Yes. Yes. That was so good. And if you think it means you're getting out of the final, you might still have another thing coming. Right, Lloyd.
Okay.
Beat that.
Yeah. Well, I'll try. So my pick here is Nottingham Forest circa late 70s, early 80s. A proper rags to riches story. So I'm going to take you back to 1975. Brian Clough has just joined Nottingham Forest after the debacle at Leeds. He and Peter Taylor get together. They round up a ragtag bunch of sort of pros that everyone thinks are past it, some promising youngsters, and they get promoted. Not only do they just get promoted, but the following season, they win the league. Not only do they win the league that season, we also won the League Cup. Following season, what do? They march through Europe and they win the European Cup. And what do they then do the following season? They may retain the European Cup. That is a proper rags to riches story. I would say that we'll never see the likes of that again. And as someone who's a Southampton fan, you know, I can only dream of my team ever doing that. But we're now in modern football where big clubs take all those good players. Clubs like mine, clubs like Nottingham Forest, clubs like, you know, Norwich, they're not allowed nice things anymore. They're not allowed to have nice things in football. The big boys take them away. So go back, relive those amazing times. If you've not seen the film about this, it's called I Believe in Miracles. It is a fantastic way to spend an hour and a half.
I should point out that in Nottingham Forest's case, it's a rags to riches to rags story. Let's face
it. Yeah, but, you know, there's a question there. I'll stand by it.
No, it's a good answer. I like it. Okay, Russell.
Talking about rags to riches to rags stories, I want to draw your attention to a certain Diego Maradona. What you might not know about Maradona is he grew up in the slums of Argentina in a place called Villa Ferrito, where he shared a room with seven brothers or sisters. When Russ he was
has
a
been
toddler,
on Wikipedia again.
No, he hasn't. But when he was a toddler, Maradona fell into the family cesspit after losing his way in the dark.
Fortunately,
his uncle found him. Right, so when he was a toddler, his uncle found him. Screaming, he goes, Diego, keep your head above the shit. And he was on hand to rescue the youngster. So, you know, to go on to do what he did after nearly drowning in a cesspit as a toddler is pretty remarkable.
And then he got his hand above the shit that was Peter Shilton.
Careful, yeah. Doug. Don't get yourself too many points. Because you know what I mean. Ben, finish us off, and I'm no
Stop
regret saying,
saying
that. No, I'm not going to.
Notably, you always ask Ben to finish you off.
I'm only human, mate.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't Phil. Obviously.
Yeah. the crazy gang have beaten the Culture Club. So, it's Wimbledon. This is rags to riches to Milton Keynes. So they were elected to the league in 1977.
To the league.
Yeah, that's how it worked back then. Yeah, you had to please the suits. They pinged around the bottom two leagues for a little while. Then they won the fourth in 1983, the third in 1984, the second in 1986, and then by 1988 they'd won the FA Cup, beating Liverpool, who were at the time probably the best team in the league. This is the first sporting game I can remember watching. Very rugged style. And they stayed in the Premiership very respectably until 2000. Apparently, they had it written into certain players' contracts that if they lost by more than four goals, they were contractually obliged to attend an opera.
Yes, that is superb. I don't know if anyone saw some of the Match of the Day stuff recently with Gary Lineker and Ian Wright and Shearer. And there's like a top 10 theme each week, but they pretty much just get together and have a natter. And I was slightly surprised. They really weren't that complimentary about Wimbledon. Like, they really, really hated playing them. And they had
they hated being roughed up,
them.
Didn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
But you think in that time, those players would have been used to being roughed up. Like, everybody forgets, like, Steve McMahon used to go around kicking people. And in that final, Vinnie Jones nearly decapitated him in the first 30 seconds. And he was whinging about it. But that was what he used to do. He was an enforcer, a hard man. I think, you know, it was just unfashionable, wasn't it?
Apparently, when John Scales was there, he sort of unthinkingly called someone a puff in training. And he said the next thing you knew, John Fashanu had absolutely leveled him.
The other thing is Plough Lane, isn't it? Their home ground. It was an absolute toilet of a ground to go to. They deliberately made the showers cold. You know, it was a pretty nasty place to play. It was a pudding of a pitch. You know, so I think that as well.
Yeah, that Plough Lane pitch was not good, was it?
Yeah.
Leveller. Pitch is a leveller.
All right, quick look at the scores, which I'm only doing now because they're so ridiculous. Ben, you're on 35, Lloyd on 27, Russ on 20, and Doug on 1. There you go. Right. Next up is the platinum Jiffy bag question. And if you match my answer, you never know. One day it might happen properly. There'll be 9 bonus points if you do. And yeah, we pandered to the host a bit a couple of weeks ago with my final round, which went, it was apparently a bit of controversy, but Phil's not here, so there wasn't any controversy. So this question is, who is sport's greatest Adam? And Lloyd, let's start with yourself.
Okay, so a bit of background to this. I got roped into this morning. So my first choice was rebuffed. And I think we'll probably hear the one.
I bet all of our first choice was exactly the same.
Yeah, I would have thought so. But I'm gonna read out some statistics to just give you the picture of this guy. His test average is 10.8. his ODI average is 25.25. And his first club average is 38.754. His bowling average in tests is 33.5. And his ODI bowling average is 31.84. That doesn't sound that great, but
bag average, greatness. Yeah.
Greatness.
But his brother died in a car crash.
Statistics. And I think you should bear that in mind when we hear some of the guys later on, because I think my competitors here have gone down the stats route. No. You need to go down the route where you've got someone who's got guts, grit, and made use of every single bit of talent he had. I am going to put forward here as the greatest sporting Adam Holyoake. Okay? So Adam Holyoake was identified as a leader very, very early. He was made captain of Surrey in 1997 to 2003. He was made England ODI captain after the debacle of the Cricket World Cup in 1996. If we remember the World Cup cricket in 1996, the highlight for England was Neil Smith vomiting on the wicket. That's the highlight of that tournament.
And the promotional single came out after England got knocked out.
That's 1999.
No, that's... Stop getting the World Cup wrong, Ben.
Ah, shocking.
But you're also forgetting, is he now not on take on MMA fighting and stuff like that?
I'm getting to that. Go. Don't worry. He took England to an ODI trophy, okay, the Sharjah Trophy, back in 1997, and was dropped after the 1999 World Cup. Obviously, he had tragedy in his life. His brother, who was a highly talented Ben Holyoake, died before his time. Really tragic. He came back after that and led Surrey to 3 championships. After he stopped playing cricket, he went away and he went to charity work for a foundation in his brother's honour. My brain's not working. And he did took part of what's known as the journey. This journey consisted of him walking from Edinburgh to Brighton. That would have been well enough to raise some money, but no. He then gets in a boat and sails across to Dieppe. He then cycles from Dieppe to Gibraltar and then rows from Gibraltar to Tangier. That is grit. That is determination. That is greatness.
That is someone who doesn't like his wife.
Where do I sign up?
He did go bankrupt in 2010 and he picked himself up off the floor and he went into MMA, mixed martial arts, and he drew his first game. And he's now coaching
of MMA.
Afghanistan, the T20 team, the Boost Defenders, and he's now coaching the England Lions as well. I present to you Adam Holyoake, the greatest Adam in sport. It's not about stats, it's not about natural talent, it's about grit and determination.
He was a weird guy, I thought. He had a certain arrogance, but didn't quite
wasn't
back
even
that
the
up.
Best Holyoake.
No, you're right.
And we all know that's just outside of Chester.
He's a green cricketer. I present you Adam Holyoake.
He played for Surrey almost his whole career. Except he rocked up for Essex to play T20. I think after he'd retired, he came out. He thought, I'll have a go at this. I haven't looked this up at all. It's just off the top of my head. But this is how my brain remembers what he did. His first innings, he came into bat. He hit his first delivery for 6. And I don't reckon he faced more than 3 more balls for Essex in his career. That was it. Turned up, cashed his check, on his way again.
He played three games for Essex in T20s. He played in a charity match and hit a few and took a few wickets. Thought, I can still do this. So rocked up at Essex and they threw him a few games.
Yeah. Lovely stuff. Right. Russ, go next. Sports greatest Adam.
Well, my answer was also taken. And I knew when the questions came out, I almost messaged straight away to snare the answer.
You're stealing my thunder a little bit. I'm going to tell you this now. Adam Gilchrist was the golden platinum jiffy bag answer. And all of you wanted it. And only one of you is going to get it. So you can all have 9 points. Now, shut up. Now, give us your other answer, Russ.
Okay, so my answer has gone to English swimmer, British swimmer, Adam Peaty. And he is an unbelievable athlete. He's broken 11 world records. He is currently the 100 meter breaststroke and the 50 meter breaststroke world champion, Olympic champion and world record holder. He has dominated the field for quite some time. And, you know, in a very small field of athletes, I don't mean swimmers, I mean successful Adams. He is right up there.
Very good. Okay. Ben.
Let's start with four Super Bowls and a very strong beard. A man that kicked 599 out of 715 field goals. Good stats. Adam Vinatieri, who is still playing at the age of 47. So he was born in 1972, which for context is the same year as Dara Abreen. he's still playing top class sport at that age. For further context, in an NFL light, that is the same year that Drew Bledsoe and Jerome Bettis were born. And also the great Aftab Habib.
Ben, I think Ben needs to contribute to Wikipedia at the end of this this show.
Oh, absolutely. But that's, what else are we going to use? All right. Doug, give us the answer that you got in with first and we were waiting for.
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to change my answer. I want to take you back to a long way back in history, actually. We're going to go...
is this the Garden of Eden? Because there was an Adam there.
Yes. We are going back to the sixth day of planet Earth. Geezer called Adam rocks up on the face.
Have you got his surname?
Molded out of clay.
I know you're talking about. You got his surname?
Adam God, his name was. molded out of clay. Just could move, like Morph, I guess. But conquered the sport of life. He's the only human male on Earth who has ever shagged every woman on planet Earth. He's just defeated the game of life.
Sensibly or not.
Yep, he is sport's greatest Adam.
I had a chat with a snake.
Yep.
Oh, that bloody snake.
Never wears any clothes. Never see his willy though, do you?
I'm going to point out that while Adam Gilchrist was the platinum jiffy bag answer and clearly sport's greatest Adam in almost everyone's eyes who has eyes, he's not the Adam that has the highest test batting average for Australia. Oh, no. Who would that be for a bonus point?
The highest what, sorry?
The highest, the Adam with the highest test batting average for Australia.
Ant.
You can have a point for that anyway.
Voges?
Bradman.
Yeah, it's Adam Voges. Adam Voges has, and wait for it.
Yeah, but didn't he play like 12 test matches? And
he
then
he played 20 test matches and he has a batting average of 61.87.
Yeah, but he started playing test cricket at the age of like 37 or something, didn't he?
Yeah,
he played in the 2016 Ashes, didn't he? Was it 16?
15.
Over here.
15.
Yeah, he did.
Just another point Just another point on our boy Adam. Qualified for the Paralympics as well until God saw that what he'd done actually made walking difficult. So separated Adam and Eve because they were originally created back to back.
Our boy Adam.
Sorry, Doug. I had to give you lots of points for that. I mean, it's a terrible shit answer, but it really made me laugh. So there you go. Right. The betting industry has been in the doldrums recently, as we know. But in the interest of helping those lovely people out, what sporting bet would you like to place on events of the next 12 months? Obviously, please gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. We have to say that legally. Ben, start us off.
To be honest, at the moment, I think all bets are off. We've got no crowds, which I think will change the way teams play and the way home and away games work. There's back-to-back test matches coming up, and those are always weird with results. And there could be another lockdown any minute, so you don't want to be betting on a season. So I don't know, the way this year's going, Trump being crucified live on TV from Fenway Park, 100 to 1, I'll put a quid on it.
Who's taking that bet?
Trump crucifying someone in Fenway Park, that's
evil. That's closer to even, isn't it? Yeah.
Trading at 101 on Betfair, apparently.
All right, Russ.
I want to put a small bet on the Lions beating South Africa 3-0 next summer. I think of all the teams in world rugby, the home nations combined can create a test team to beat South Africa. South Africa's game plan is very simple but extremely effective. Huge power up front, massive specimens of men, and speed out wide. You know, Umpimpi, is that his name? I can't remember. I don't remember if I pronounced that right or not. The guys they've got on the wing are absolute rocket fuel. Their nines are tenacious and they're quick. You've got Reinach and Faf. And then you've got the likes of Dielende and stuff in the centres. I firmly believe that the Lions will have too much skill, but also be able to rival them for power. So I will be putting £10 on a 3-0 Lion.
Okay. Doug?
I'm going to go for the bet that I think would make you the most money, and that would be that the Kansas City Chiefs will go 19-0 and be only the second team in NFL history to go undefeated throughout the course of a season. So the only major stumbling block in the way of that is the Baltimore Ravens with their quarterback, who's hates me for some inexplicable reason.
Lamar Jackson.
I think that the combination of possibly the heir apparent Tom Brady's throne coming into a prime combined with a huge compilation of assets that they've got on the offensive side of the ball. If they can just switch on their defense for one season, they will hose up and no one will get near them, because the NFL seems to be, the talent seems to be becoming thinner and thinner, a bit in the way that the NBA goes, where the best teams are accumulating a lot of talent and the worst teams are just happy to be shit. And tanking's a real thing in the NFL now. And there's three teams. Basically, the Chiefs will play 6 games a year against teams that haven't got a prayer of winning the Super Bowl for the next decade, much in the same way that New England did. So, and in what would be a somewhat of a serious answer for me, go and actually get the wheelbarrow out and put some money on Kansas City going undefeated next year.
Imagine supporting Kansas City Chiefs your whole life and then a couple of years ago just stopping doing that and then they turn into this team.
Or you kick the bucket just before they get good.
I actually did that.
Don't panic, listeners. Dougie is very much still alive.
Chris, are you dead?
Okay, Lloyd, what's your bet?
Okay, well, I'm going to take you across the other side of the world to Tokyo. to the postponed Olympics. I think this is interesting because the Olympics works on most Olympic sports work on a 4-year cycle. So if things were normal, in inverted commas, everyone, all these athletes would be hitting peak right now. But now they've got an extra year, that throws everything out of alignment. And also it means people can get back from fitness. People are going to lose form. People are going to get form. And it's going to be down to probably quite a lot of teams and organizations getting their prep right is who's going to win the medal. So with that in mind, if you were looking for a flutter on this, these are some of the things to look out for and maybe put some money on. Number one, Dina Asher-Smith, the amazingly talented British runner. This is a girl who not only is an amazing runner, a world-class runner, but she also got a first in history from, I think it's UCL, whilst doing all this.
King's College London.
King's College, sorry, yeah. And it was a decent university, not like our terrible party uni we went to. You know, to medal in that, I'd also say Team GB, buckle in, everyone. Team GB are going to have a worse game than they had in Rio. Okay, and I reckon they'll finish outside the top five because Russia's going to come back as a competitive nation. China and America always put it in. The host Japan are going to win some. And France are going to probably do well as well because they're gearing up for an Olympics in Paris the next way round. But you also got Korea. They'll clean up in the archery and pistol shooting. Put some money on that. Also, put some money on Caleb Drussel. He's already broken two of Phelps's records. And if you want a home banker in the gymnastics, I'm going to screw this pronunciation up here because I've written it so badly.
Just give it to me, I'll sort it.
Okay. There's more aspersions on the university women too here. The Koei Ichimura, the veteran, or will be veteran gymnastic, you know, it's his home Olympics, it's his last hurrah. I'd put money on him picking up a gold as well.
Lloyd really doesn't want Doug to get going at 9:30, does he?
Yeah, sorry, Doug.
You're not sorry. All right. With that in mind, I'm going to read the next question really slowly. No, I'm not. Right. So Keir Starmer has accused Boris Johnson of winging it recently. So who in sport has been winging it for years? Doug?
I'm not filling here, but I just need to find out what my answer is. So I'm just, I don't want to make...
Such a shit bloke.
These are for us.
I've just pressed the wrong one there. Yeah, so basically, other than me, anyone with the title director of football, you're not in charge of the team, you don't pick the players, you don't make the transfers... You have no say over the tactics. It is the ultimate job for the boys. It's an absolute farce. I'm the director of football. Your team haven't won for 15 games. Manager's fault. Yeah, manager's fault.
Harry Redknapp being appointed director of football at Portsmouth by Milan Mandrić. It is the epitome of that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a nonsense. It's an utter nonsense. It's not like American sports where you have a general manager that actually has some influence. It's basically a bloke who gets paid to turn up. And if anyone can tell me what a director of football does, then please go ahead.
That could be the perfect answer. But let's see.
Organises community days would be answer one.
Well, I could tell you what a director of football was, but I think that would sort of take you over time, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, well. All I know is whenever I get one on Football Manager, all they do is suggest that I buy really shit players.
And then you get sacked.
Yeah. Just ignore them.
As soon as they appoint a director, it's like the vote of dread of confidence, isn't it? They appoint a director of football. You're five games.
Yeah, you're on the way out. Thanks for coming.
That's what Les Reed did at Southampton for the last few years. And, you know, we went backwards.
To be fair, you should have signed Keith Skill. And that joke, nobody else will get.
I feel like I did, weirdly.
All right. Jason Piss Flaps would be a good director of football.
Jason Piss Flap and Keith Skill.
Right, Ben, who's been winging it for years?
I'm gonna use some phrases now. Use it. I can see no reason to not award a try. His hands are moving backwards, but the momentum's... The people who make rugby's lawmakers, you might want to call them, they just bring stuff in. His hands weren't pointing forward. I mean, he's chucked it a yard forward, mate. It doesn't matter what direction his hands are pointing in. Now they've got the video ref to deal with. You've got all these rules being brought in to deal with head injuries that don't deal with head injuries. They just make the game unwatchable. And now they're thinking about an orange card.
Lovely. Right.
That's
Russell.
Not the worst thing they're thinking of. They're thinking about summer rugby for amateurs.
That'll kill sport.
That's me then. Retired.
Fucking kill my bank balance if rugby goes summer, I tell you that.
There are lots and lots and lots of football managers that have been winging it for years. The likes of Steve Bruce, that continually seem to get quite high profile jobs despite never actually winning anything, being more than mediocre and just being bang average. One of the epitome, I think, of the bang average repeated manager hiring is Mark Hughes. He had a decent playing career. He was revered. He was abrasive. He played for the Man United. He played for Barcelona. He played for Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Southampton, Everton, Blackburn. Right. He's played 799 league games, scoring 224 goals. His managerial career is less than illustrious. In 610 managerial games, he had a win ratio of a win percentage of 37.4%. He, as a player, won the Premier League. He won FA Cups. He won the Cup Winners' Cup. As a manager, he won Premier League Manager of the Month 2007. Yet, until 2018, was still being hired by Premier League teams. It just beggars belief that these guys continually, over and over again, manage to get jobs. Just
destroy an exit.
Yeah.
Okay, Lloyd.
Okay, so the guy I would say made a career winging it only really looked like he was winging it, but underneath this effortlessness was actually a real honed athlete, someone who actually really did care, but he didn't look like he did. And I still think a lot of people today, particularly sort of the true football sort of people, still sort of think about this. And it's Matt Le Tissier. He is someone who made an absolute career of doing stuff that looked spontaneous. He's all ability. And therefore, he didn't have to work hard and hard and hard and hard. I think the best thing that sums this up, when Alan Ball became Southampton manager in 1994, when they were really staring relegation in defence, got the boys all round and said, right, this is what is going to happen. You get the ball, you get it in the tears. He'll do the rest. That is a man who's really, really good. He is an absolutely top lad as well. So I met him a couple of years ago and they say, don't meet your heroes. Nah, this guy is absolutely fantastic. And I asked him about a goal that looked effortless and it was just a free kick he did against Wimbledon. And he went, oh, no. We practiced that really, really hard. But you wouldn't know it by looking and watching him play. And I think actually, in a weird way, and I think this is a particular English football disease, when we get players like that who look effortless, people reject them because they don't appear to be working hard. And yet, you know, therefore, England missed out on a really great creative player that could have done a lot of good for England in the mid-90s.
Do you think, why do you think he didn't have 100 caps for England?
the argument would be down our way. I'm a proud New Forester. Would be very simple. He played for Southampton. If he played for Spurs, he'd gone to Chelsea, you know, he would have got way more caps. It's as simple as that.
Thing is, he played in an era with Alan Shearer, Teddy Sheringham, Andy Cole, who didn't get anywhere near enough England caps, but never really did it on the international stage. Ian Wright, there are a lot of good strikers. And Letizia was the main man at Southampton, wasn't he? But he never really fitted into any other sort of structured system. You know, he's playing up front with James Beattie, for the love of God.
Well,
Letizia?
Yeah, but that's not going to translate always to the international stage, is it? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I would say the time he was in his pomp was when Venables was there, and there was a lot of rumours flying around that Venables wanted him at Spurs and he didn't move. There was a lot of stuff like that. And then you would have thought Glenn Hoddle, who's the manager following him, had the same problem. You would have played him, but no. So I still go back to this idea of, you know, being at Southampton and the perceived lack of work ethic. I think it was a big problem for him.
You can make up, you can forgive work ethic if you've got the ability to bang it in for 35 yards in.
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? But, you know, say the
that, that's what Russ has been telling himself for the last 20 years.
James Beattie only had 3 less England caps than Matt Letizia.
No, yeah, it's mental, isn't it?
That's crazy. Okay, right, let's make the next one a relative quickie if we can, and I'll start taking points off if you go on too long. It's about time we dedicated a question to you, Russ.
I love that.
There you go. Who is sport's greatest ball man? Ben, start us off.
I thought I'd go for sort of an old school baldy. So from before the time when shaving your head became sort of socially acceptable, people used to get a good fringe. So I've gone for Jordan Lechkov from the great Bulgarian side of 94, scored the winner against Germany.
Did he have the little island on top there?
He effectively had a fringe around the side, a little island on the top, and more hair on his eyebrows than his actual head.
Steve McLaren Island, isn't it?
Hair Island.
Extra point for the island. I watched the highlights of that game the other day. Fantastic. I just absolutely euphoric at the time. When England weren't there at that World Cup, and then Germany losing in the quarterfinals to anybody. It was amazing. Okay, Douglas.
Andre Agassi. Shit sport. Bald head.
Extra points. Mediocre
wife.
Okay, Lloyd.
But she was good at tennis.
Okay, so my greatest baldy of all time is Joanna Rausel. I'll tell you for why. Men can expect to lose hair. This athlete, she suffered from alopecia at the age of 10. And I teach secondary school, and throughout, particularly my early part of career when I taught in England, you know, if girls' self-esteem was always, you know, really low. So imagine going through those formative years without that hair. But no, she picked herself up. She got out on a bike track and she was exceptionally fast. She was really the anchor of the pursuit team that won the Olympics in 2012, 2016. When she retired, she said this, and I quote, "The decision to step away has been the hardest thing I've ever had to make. I believe I have more to offer the world." That's what she said as she retired. She's not done yet.
I wasn't sure whether you were going with a piss take answer there, or you went the correct way. I love that. That was superb. Right, Russell.
Firstly, I just want to take slight issue with Lloyd's answer, because the question is sports the greatest ever bold man. But we'll leave it there.
Whatever.
Very quickly, sports greatest ever bold man is Pierluigi Collina. The arguably the scariest official ever to grace a football pitch, had ultimate and complete control of pretty much every football match I ever saw him officiate. The players never seemed to mess with him. They never seemed to answer him back. They never seemed to engage in debate with him. He made his decision. He stared at them like he was a whiting that had just been pulled out of the deep depths of the ocean. And they just carried on. And probably the best football official ever to have officiated the game.
Completely hairless.
Completely hairless.
I imagine head to toe, I assume. But, you know,
definitely.
Wasn't that on the last show?
Smooth dick.
Completely hairless.
they tried to get him to...
Shut up, smooth dick.
They tried to get him to referee in the Premier League, didn't they, after he finished in Italy, and he didn't bite. It was just a bit odd. Yeah, it'll be good to see him over here.
All right, I'm going to shock you now. Russell, you're in the lead on 100 points. Lloyd's on 93, Doug's on 85, Ben's on 95. Any other business time? Doug, start us off, just in case you have to leave.
Yeah, because then I'm going to bolt. It's my mate's 40th today, and I forgot, so I'm a good pal. So, you know, as if lockdown wasn't a big enough piss take, I got offered my first job since the lockdown happened. I think you can all guess what it was.
How is Tashkent at this time of year?
Tashkent, I think I went to school with her.
Capital of Uzbekistan, I think you'll find. Sorry for ruining fun with accuracy.
Not so funny, it's accurate.
Luckily, it got rescinded. The offer got rescinded about 5 hours later, as they overbooked. So I don't have to put myself through. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. I must go and be a somewhat better friend to my friend than I've actually been. Just one more thing. I, as part of my job as a landscaper today, I had to move a very rich person's pile of compost that had obviously been decomposing in the corner of their garden for about 15 years. We filled up an entire skip with the best quality compost I've ever seen in my life, only for the wife of the family to drive up at the end of the day and unload a 60-litre polythene bag full of compost she'd bought from Homebase. See you later, chaps.
See you, mate. Nice to meet you, Doug.
Cheers, you too, mate. Thanks.
Right. Needless to say, Doug's not going to be in the final. Unless the three of you have such catastrophic any other businesses.
We have
biznai.
To call him back.
Right? Yeah.
Any other biznai?
Hello.
Flat over. Right. Lloyd, why don't you give us some Eastern European any other business?
Okay, so my OB is really just we've been in lockdown in Romania for actually quite a bit longer than it has been in the UK. I work in an international school, and in February we got quite a lot of Chinese kids that were coming back after New Year's, and we're like, oh, hang on. So we started very quietly to sort of think about it, and then they announced it very quickly, and I've been teaching from home the kids online for the last 10 weeks. But because I live on my own, I haven't actually really had actually any kind of physical interaction with anyone for the last 10, 12 weeks. I've lost track of how long we've been in. I go home in a couple of weeks, and I can't wait to. I'm just going to see my family and hug my parents, which would be nice. But the other thing I wanted to just say is, seeing what's happened in the UK compared to over here, it's been an absolute shock. I mean, you're probably aware of this, but honestly, the UK is an absolute nightmare of all this. You know, Romania is a Eastern European country, post-communist, but the way that they've been very clear in exactly what everyone has to do has been light years ahead of what Boris Johnson and his cronies have managed to do, you know, over in the UK. And it's just unbelievable watching it from here.
It's easier said than done, though, when probably a large portion of the population is still pretty conformist and do as they're told.
It's not in
comparison.
I would disagree with that. I think it's just been clear. They've said this is what's happening. You're going into lockdown. Everyone's in. I live bang in the middle of the city, so most of the day, there's a lot of cars going by, but for weeks and weeks and weeks, it's you could hear the birds, you can hear everything out there. I mean, it's been properly in lockdown. And the way that they've gone back out of lockdown has been really clear and systematic and made sense. And it's just been because what they've done is just all the communications run through the president. He's the one that's been announcing it. You know, anything, any disagreement has been hammered out before they announce to the people. It's just been, in terms of communication, so much more clearer. And that's been what's happened. They've been, you know, pretty big on finding people. The police have made lots of money through fines. And there was a lot of disquiet about that. But I wouldn't say, you know, the people in Romania are more conformist than anyone else. You know, I think it's just been, it's about of that communication. But seeing what's happened in the UK from afar, it's been a real eye-opener.
I would say in general, the population, you know it a lot more than I do, Lloyd. So I don't really want to, you know, cast aspersions or go into it too different. But historically, I'm not even going to say it because you know what I'm going to say.
Yeah,
Romanians don't behave like dicks like they do in the UK.
Correct. And it was more disparaging on the UK population, where people just go, we don't give a fuck. Whereas the people, the respect and the levels of conformity to authority as to say, right, these are the messages, this is what we need to do, as opposed to these are the messages. This is another group of people saying these messages aren't clear enough, and another group of people going, these messages are bullshit. It just makes a mockery of the whole situation. Whereas if you've got a system where people are able to have clear and consistent and transparent messaging, then it makes it a lot easier to follow.
It's probably
you just made my point for me.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you. I'm 100% agreeing with you. It's just
It's probably less conformity rather than it's not so much that they've got less of a ingrained sense of entitlement that seems
100%. Yeah, that's a much better way of putting it.
From here, I don't know whether you'd agree with this. It was VE Day. It seemed that everyone in the UK seemed to be working fine. Yeah, they were behind, but then VE Day happened, and it seemed to me from here, and actually a lot of other expats that I've sort of been talking to, that everyone just kind of went mad. Oh, well, VE Day, let's all have a party. And then from there, it just seems to have just gone downhill.
Yeah.
You could say that about Britain since the actual VD.
Well, yeah, you could. Yeah.
All right, where on earth are we? Right, Doug's gone, Lloyd's gone. Ben, any other business?
Well, as it's been some fairly important subjects in the last 2 or 3 minutes, I'm going to keep it up there, and I'm going to talk about my hair. So,
he says wearing a cap.
Why are you stealing my any other business, mate?
So, at the start of towards the start of lockdown, my hair had already got quite long, and we did a little homemade hair cutting arrangement of a grade one up the sides, and the top stayed on, and it was all right. And then we went with it, and lockdown lasted longer than we thought. And yesterday we tried it again, but the hair on the top of my head got so long that I looked like Bert off Sesame Street. So at this point, we decided we'd have to remedy it, and more clippers came out, and more guards on the clippers came out. And at some stage, it was like in The Simpsons when Mr. Burns tells that guy to cut his sideburns. So long story short, I'm wearing a hat a lot at the moment.
Fair enough. Okay, Russ, any other business? Talk about your hair.
Well, yeah, that's that done.
Don't take long.
I've toyed and wrestled a lot with my ear business today, to the point where I can't really submit one because I'm so exasperated. I'm so annoyed with, well, just everything in general at the moment. Like, I'm pretty angry, but just internally, and I've got no reason to be, and I've got no...
a lot of people feel like that at the moment.
It's really odd, and it's not a nice feeling. And, you know, I will as you well know, make jokes about any subject. I've got no problem saying stuff that often doesn't need to be said. But at the moment, I'm struggling to even, you know, make a ill-judged joke out of stuff.
Even since Madeleine McCann's been back in the news.
Even since some German pedo is now being accused of, you know, saying Madeleine McCann. And, you know, apparently, it's what. In fact, no, here we go. You've just given me something.
Strap in.
Right, shut yourself in. How have they just discovered in the last however many days that there was a convicted German paedophile living, who appeared to be living in Praia da Luz at the same time as Madeleine McCann went missing? Is this just a made up link, or are they just, you know, are they just shoehorning some German pedo into the frame because they've got nothing else? I am, you know, how quickly coronavirus seems to have been forgotten for a couple of days because of all the other stuff that's going on in the world. Social distancing apparently in some areas doesn't seem to mean a fucking thing anymore because literally nobody gives a fuck. If everybody in the world just took everybody else on face value when they meet them, don't judge them, don't cast aspersions. I know this is absolute utopia and easier said than done. And I've just called somebody I've never met a German pedo. which I'm well aware is hypocritical, and I'm wrapping myself up.
Isn't he convicted?
He is convicted.
So I think you're fine there.
Okay. Okay.
I'll give you points. I wasn't sure if I should, but you know, there we are.
But how easy would life be if we just, you know, just approached it and gone, you know what? You don't have to come into my. Do you remember personal space? Do you remember when personal space was a thing? Get out of my personal space.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
but even before coronavirus, just a bit of personal space. Give me some personal space. Surely that's all everybody just needs to instill now with coronavirus, isn't it? Just give me a bit of personal space. Away we go. Let's move on.
I miss when everyone was arguing about the colour of the UK passport. I miss that. Yeah, that the world was a fantastic place back then when we were
it was let's be honest, but it's got it was worse. A shit place it's then it's a shit place now.
It's good, definitely got worse.
On a lighter note, I've had my garden semi-landscaped and it wasn't Doug that did it, so that's a pass.
Points for that. In fact, looking at the scores, Doug, are you still here? What's that you say? You think Saracens should be awarded the premiership? Do you deny that?
He doesn't deny it. He's not denying it.
I think his silence speaks volumes. Anyway, he is in last place on 94 points. Lloyd, you don't make the final either on debut, I'm afraid, but on 102. I mean, this all really, really, really matters. Ben on 110 and Russ on 112 are going to be in this week's final and defend the undefendable. And who was second? Because we have to, I can't remember why.
Ben was second.
Ben, you were second. So would you like your 22 seconds clock? Would you like to go first or second?
I think I'll go first.
Okay. And you can have, and I'm definitely not running out of ideas with this. The West Indies cricket team should force all their players to tour England despite coronavirus concerns because they're a bad enough team at full strength.
Well, I just think that's true. I mean, they've got that spin bowler who's like 9 feet tall, so he'll be above the clouds of infected air anyway. And basically, the ECB need the money, so all the other teams should do as they're told, just to keep Giles Clarke in public paid Jaguars.
2 seconds, 1 second. There was a bit of dead air on the end there. Russ.
We all know that's a crime. Well,
if you did it in 20 seconds like a proper programme, that would have been a perfect answer.
Who would do this in 20 seconds? It would be like they're ripping us off. Russell, 22 seconds. The 2020 Six Nations tournament should just be awarded to Ireland because they've got the best fans.
Irish fans are arguably the most passionate and the most informed and the most forgiving of all the fans in world rugby. Now, they've had to put up with some hard times in the past, And I think at the moment, you know, they've got a great team and they're a great bunch and they all love to have a Guinness.
You filled your 22 seconds. That is a winning performance there, Russell. Well done.
Yeah. I should have picked question two.
Yeah.
It's a banker, that one.
Have an open goal, Russ.
Tap it. Just a tap in.
There we go. It's a shame. Obviously, if Doug was here, he would have had that question, whichever way he thought he was going to go, first or second, not in the final. He'd have still had to defend that. But there we go. Ireland, 2026 Nations Champions. And Russ, Punching Chat X champion. Congratulations.
Woohoo! Thanks, mate. That was awesome. Again, thank you to people that submitted questions or the person that submitted questions this week. I know Patrick has put a couple in.
We'll get those in next week.
Which might be good for future weeks. We might be back next week for Punchy Chat 11, if you want. We might be having some rugby soon. I don't know. But this is still fun. Lloyd, thanks for joining us for International Punchy Chat, live from Bucharest.
You're more welcome. That was good fun there, boys.
Yeah. You're always welcome. Always welcome back. And I can't promise to ever air the episode where you talked about Romanian rugby.
I was going to bring you up on that. It was rugby in Dubai.
Dubai, was it?
So
with the greatest respect, that's how much I remember it. And I lost. And
I puzzled over that, and I just thought I must have been that shit that it was no good for consumption.
It wasn't even that. I think we recorded it in like a little interim period about something. I don't even know why we were on a break. Maybe it was like end of season or there wasn't much going on. And then I just didn't put it out, and it was all sat there ready. And then my laptop died, and I had to basically format it. And it was like, oh well, that's gone.
I'm not worried; it's not a problem. I will say, actually, speaking of Romania, they're about to finish building the new rugby stadium in Bucharest. When they're playing the second tier Six Nations in February.
I genuinely think that would be incredible.
Yeah.
Lloyd, you've missed off the most pertinent piece of information about that. Well,
I was about
to
come to that. It's across the road's Europe's biggest beer hall.
So we need to have a mall over away weekend in Bucharest. Watch some second tier sort of Six Nations, whatever they call it, the rugby fucking League One, whatever they call it. And
why if they've put the stadium opposite the world's biggest beer hall, why are Italy still in the Six Nations?
Yeah. And also I know the Egg Chasers do their European tour and stuff. Maybe we should invite anybody who listens to All Over, and if you've got this far and you're up for a weekend in Bucharest next year.
Russ, he said the world's biggest beer hall, not the world's smallest.
It doesn't matter.
I should clarify, Europe's biggest.
We'll have a great time, whatever happens. But we are going to, when the fixtures are announced, and if and when we're actually going to be allowed to sit in a crowd and watch rugby, we will organise a weekend in Bucharest. We're not all going to stay in Lloyd's flat. That's a fact. We will. You'll have to find your own accommodation. However, let's have a week in the Bucharest, go to the Europe's biggest beer hall and get yellow jerseys on and have a great time. Done. Right. Anyway, thank you, Lloyd. It's a pleasure. Ben,
no worries, Adam,
thank you very much. We'll be back for Punching Chat XI, I guess, next week. Punching Chat X1 next week.
Prick.
And we'll see you soon. 1 hour and 4 minutes. Go well.